Relief in Asia after President Trump's State of the Union address. And do richer Kenyans spend their money in malls?
A lot of the spending in middle class is not actually disposable and discretionary income.
Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. To quote one of my BBC colleagues, it was the teleprompter, not Twitter, Trump, who delivered last night's State of the Union address. In it, he only nodded towards international trade.
We will protect American workers and American intellectual property through strong enforcement of our trade rules.
The BBC's Karishma Vaswani in Singapore says Asian businesses were relieved he didn't take the opportunity for now to stoke a trade war with China.
They are extremely wary of the kinds of moves that might come from the White House in the months to come and the U.S. Trade Department. You know, Trump's administration has been very clear that this is the year they're going to tackle some of those issues. He's not hidden behind any sort of smokescreen about that. And two things to watch out for in particular, the intellectual property investigation in China, as well as the steel and aluminum tariffs that have to be decided upon at some point before the summer of this year. All indications suggest that might happen sooner rather than later. And I think that will be part of the whole message of the Trump administration, which has been to say that they are taking America's economy back into their own hands, making trade deals fair for American workers. Again, he talked in the speech of how many more jobs were added in the manufacturing sector and bringing factories from Asia back to the United States. I think 2018 will certainly be the year for what might happen in this sphere.
Karishma Vaswani, let's do the numbers. The global market sell-off, which ripped through Wall Street yesterday, is cooling off. Asian markets ended mixed while European stocks are on the rise. Meanwhile, Fujifilm is set to take over Xerox, ending a 55-year-old joint venture, and it's announced 10,000 global job cuts. Now, it costs $1,400 a month to live in a big city like London. So how does a young person looking for a job afford that while doing an unpaid internship, as they're increasingly expected to do? Connor Ryan is a director at the Sutton Trust in the UK, which studies social mobility.
A fifth of graduates who have done an internship and have done an unpaid internship, if you're effectively doing a full-time job, you're doing 9 to 5, you are essentially working, and minimum wage legislation does apply in the United Kingdom. Interns quite often see the internship as a route into a job later on, so they haven't got any great incentive to report what's going on. Those young people who can't afford to take an unpaid internship, because it's costing $1,400 a month in London, for example, they're being locked out of it.
Are you saying that according to the law, an unpaid internship is basically illegal?
It is, but the problem is no employer has been prosecuted for one. In the United Kingdom, one of the Conservative peers, Lord Holmes of Richmond, is trying to tighten the law so that it is explicitly stated that if you're doing work experience that lasts for more than 4 weeks, then effectively you should be paid the national minimum wage.
And we've also seen that inflation is going up. We've seen wages stagnate. So going forward, young people really have to figure out how to balance these huge outlays with the kind of valuable work experience that they obviously want to get.
Practices are changing. There's a lot of industry organizations now in public relations, in the fashion media sectors, that are saying it's not on, actually, that if you are taking on an intern and they're doing a job that's lasting for more than a month, then you should pay them. So I think what we're keen to see is the legislative backup, but we're also keen to see a social pressure on companies and organizations.
Connor Ryan. How many shopping malls is too many? Multinational companies eager to invest in Kenya were encouraged by reports of a growing middle class with money to spend. But as the BBC's Vivian Nunes reports, not all that glitters is gold.
Two Rivers is one of the largest malls in sub-Saharan Africa, and it's getting bigger. Alongside the outdoor plaza where I am now, there's a hotel under construction. There's an amphitheatre being built for concerts, and a 10-screen cinema is in the pipeline. Centum, a Kenyan investment firm, is behind the project. Its chairman, Chris Karubi, shows me around.
There is something for everybody inside our mall. If you come here on a Saturday, Sunday, there will be thousands and thousands of people. Literally, it gets chock-a-blocked.
When I visit, the centre has just opened for the day. It's not very busy, but a couple of shops are attracting customers. One of them is the Cavernous supermarket on the ground floor.
My name is Alex. I'm going to the village, so I've come to do some shopping.
This is an enormous supermarket. It's quite new for a Kenyan shopper, isn't it, to have a supermarket this big?
This is our lifestyle now. People have purchasing power.
I guess that's true for some parts of the population, but not all.
Yeah, other part of the population is a different story.
Nzetse Were is a development economist based in Nairobi.
A lot of the spending in middle class is not actually disposable and discretionary income. A lot of that income goes to really basic things such as food, schooling and education, because a lot of middle class people prefer their children being in private schools, getting private health care rather than using public facilities.
Last month, analysis by Standard Bank concluded that after a decade of robust construction, Nairobi is now oversupplied with shopping centres. Back at Nairobi's Two Rivers Mall, Sharon works in a branch of the Banana Box gift shop. Business was subdued over much of last year because Kenyans are reluctant to spend when there's political uncertainty.
Many people are coming, but I don't think many people are shopping.
Local and international backers of Kenya's shopping centre boom will be hoping consumer spending picks up in 2018. In Nairobi, I'm the BBC's Vivienne Nunes for Marketplace.
Finally, pity the two British guys who thought they'd discovered a hoard of Roman gold worth several $100,000. The coins turned out to be props from a film about two guys who are amateur treasure hunters. In London, I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.